We can't believe it's been 10 years. It's certainly flown over, and we still miss him every day.
It's obviously, like we said, 10 years ago. Can you, in your own words, and in look back at what you remember of that day in your own eyes as well?
I remember that I worked permanent nights, and Melanie had gone shopping for school clothes for Rhys because he was going to Fazakerley High School once he went back to school in the September. And it was just a normal day, really. We had our tea, and Rhys was going out to play football training. And I remember sitting on the couch watching the telly, and I remember him running back saying that he needed to take his subs for the next season. And Melanie got his subs and ran him back up to the fir tree.
Tell us what happens after that, then.
Well, I got ready for work as I normally would and headed off to work, and then I got up the M57 and I got a phone call off Mel saying that Rhys had been shot, and the first thing that came into my head that he'd been shot with an air gun or something. So I turned round and came back home and headed up towards the fir tree, and all I could see was like a big commotion of ambulances and police and people, and it was just really hard to understand what had gone on.
What happened after that then, Steve?
Well, I parked up and walked over to the fir tree car park, and I just noticed a big pool of blood on the floor. Someone said overheard a conversation say that they'd taken someone to hospital, so I headed off to the hospital. When I eventually got to Alderhay, Melanie was in an ante room, and Rhys was in one of the trauma rooms being worked on by the trauma team. And when I got in there, Melanie came out and kept on saying that they couldn't revive him. Went in to see him, and obviously he was just lying on the stretcher with a lot of people working on him, and somebody explaining what procedures they were doing. And it was just a harrowing scene of him just lying on the stretcher with, you know, blood everywhere, tubes going in all kinds of places, and people working on him trying to keep him alive.
Was it that time that you thought it didn't look good for Rhys at all?
Well, I'm not a medical expert, but you know, the way I was looking at it, it did look really, really serious. And like I say, there was no response from Rhys. There was quite a lot of blood, and it was difficult to see what injuries he did actually have. But it was just horrendous.
What was going through your head at the time?
I was just hoping and just wishing and praying that he was going to pull through. I didn't want for one minute think that he was going to die. Melanie was just distraught because there just didn't seem to be any response from him.
Seeing Rhys like that, seeing Melanie the way she was as well, how did you feel at that moment?
You just felt helpless. There's just nothing you could do. There was just, you know, you're not medically trained. You couldn't help in any way. I mean, we were asked to obviously rub his feet and talk to him, which we did, and it was just again, there was just no response from him at all. And the doctors and nurses were working on him, and they were working really hard to try and revive him, but he just wasn't responding at all.
Can you tell us about that moment when the doctors told you that there was no way he could possibly be revived?
All through the procedures, the doctor was explaining to us what was happening, what procedures they were doing, and what other options they had once that particular procedure didn't work. And it got to a point where they said that if he didn't breathe on his own once they'd finished these certain procedures, there was nothing else that they could do, and you know, therefore, you know, he would be obviously declared dead, which, you know, was. We just wanted some reaction from him, but it just didn't happen.
I know it's very hard to sort of begin to even imagine what that was like, but can you describe that feeling when you found out that news?
You just feel destroyed. You know, you want him to come round. You want him to revive. You want him to wake up, so to speak. But there was just nothing from him. He was just lying there, just not moving at all.
So when you got that news, What did you do then? What happened next?
All the medical staff filed out one by one, and we were left with a policeman, myself, Melanie and Rhys. We were given a few moments together. And then, obviously, we got moved out, and they said that they were going to move Rhys to the mortuary.
And what happened after that? What was that like to go through?
they took him up to the mortuary, and we went up, and Rhys was, he was still had his tubes in his mouth. He was still covered in blood. He was still just lying there as though he was asleep. Obviously, he was behind a pane of glass at that point, and it was just hard to comprehend what was going on. We had to give details to the police. We had to give details of, obviously, identify him as being our son.
So, tell us what happened after that. Then, did you go home?
Yeah, we came home. As I say, we were just all in total shock. We didn't sleep. We didn't eat. And obviously we were due to go back to the hospital the next day to visit Rhys in the mortuary the next day.
Can you begin to describe what that first night was like for you and Mel and Owen, how everyone was feeling?
Well, Owen went to his room. Me and Mel just sat downstairs for a long time. I don't think we talked much. It was just total shock.
What was going through your head at the time?
Just trying to comprehend what had gone on and how an 11-year-old can be shot in a car park doing what he should be doing.
And in the meantime as well, trying to comfort your wife and son at the same time as well.
Yeah, I mean, we all had our own things going on in our head, and there was just so many things going round in your mind. You know, who did it? You know, are they going to get them? What happened exactly? Because we knew very little about what had actually gone on up there. We knew nothing of the gangs. We knew nothing of you know, the people who'd done it. We knew very little and very little at all.
You said you felt helpless. What was it like seeing Mel go through those emotions as well?
Well, it's just indescribable, because there's nothing you can do that can console her. There's nothing that you can do that make things right. There's nothing you can do. It's just a total desperation that there's absolutely nothing you can do. This has happened. Rhys is dead, and there's nothing you can do.
Was that first night alone in the house, was that the hardest moment for you and the rest of the family?
Yeah, it was a really hard night to get through. And obviously there's many days that followed that which were just as challenging and just as hard for us in other different ways. But I think obviously because it was such a shock as to what had gone on, it was a really, really difficult night to get through. And then obviously you've got the next morning to contend with.
So tell us about that next morning. You woke up and went straight to the hospital to see Rhys.
We got picked up by the police, and we got taken to Alder Hey. And I think one of the porters had very kindly put an Everton duvet on him, and he just looked, he'd been cleaned up a bit by then, and he looked very much as though he was just asleep. He could just go over to him and just wake him up. He just looked very, very calm and very serene. He didn't look, you know, he just looked like a normal little boy asleep.
And there was a moment as well where you and Melanie wanted to see him up close as well, and the police officer sort of tried to intervene as well. Can you tell us a bit about that and how that made you and Mel feel as well?
I think we realised that obviously Rhys needs to be preserved as a crime scene, because there's forensics that they can get from his body, which will help with the investigation. And we understood about the fact that, you know, if we get, we could actually contaminate the body and the crime scene, so to speak. So we understood that, and but Melanie just wants to give him a hug, and obviously the police officer saying you can't, because he's a crime scene. And obviously you know, she was told, well, you know, if you're going to carry on hugging him, I'm going to have to arrest you and take you away, because you can't be doing those sort of things, because we need to preserve the evidence.
What was that like to be told that?
It's hard, but it's understandable. But it's, you don't think that you're doing any wrong, and you just want to try and, I don't know, you just want to give him a hug, because he looks, you know, he looks like he just needs a hug.
You spoke about the effect it had on you and Melanie. What effects, how did Owen feel throughout this whole thing? I know he was particularly quiet, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Owen dealt with it himself in his own way, and I think he probably dealt better with it than both Mel and I did. You know, he went back to school, you know, after a reasonably short period. He had his you know, he had his exams and that to prepare for. You know, he wanted to go on to university and he wanted to do things, and I mean, credit to the lad, he did all those things. He went back to, you know, he went to university, he got his degree, he got his master's, and he did really, really well.
Obviously, 10 years ago since that awful day, I suppose you'll be asking yourself as well what Rhys would be doing now if he was still alive. Do you have any idea what you'd would envision him being like or doing as well in his life?
I really don't know what he'd have gone on to do, you know, as a profession. I'd like to think he'd have gone to university. I'd like to think that he'd have, you know, got some qualifications and whatever he chose to do. I mean, obviously he was a big sports fan. He loved football. He loved anything to do with football. Loved playing football. And maybe it would have been something to do with sports or football or something like that that he may have gone on to do. You can only speculate, but I think you'd end up torturing yourself as to, you know, trying to put him into something that he may not have gone on to do, if you understand what I mean.
And obviously a really big blue, obviously, as well. I wonder what he would have made of Everton right now as well. They're looking forward, moving to a new stadium as well, getting all these signings in. I wonder what he would have made of it.
I think he would have been made up. I mean, I think most Blues are pinching themselves, thinking that, you know, we some seasons we bring in one or two players, and this season we just seem to be snapping up real quality players. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, the new season with Owen, because we're still season ticket holders. We're really looking forward to, you know, going to Goodison and you know, hopefully see a big difference in the side.
Can I ask about his room as well? I can imagine at the time it was full of Everton gear, memorabilia, and blue everywhere as well. Is it still the same? What's his room like now?
His room's been redecorated. We've obviously changed his room. His room is just a normal everyday room now. Because we were intending to move not long after we lost Rhys, but that never came off. But you know, we were advised to change the room and change certain things in the house, which we ended up doing, but we never ended up moving.
What was that like to change Reese's room?
It was hard. It was difficult, but obviously the intentions were that we were going to move, so there was an end reason for doing it. You know, we'll never forget Reese, and you know, we wouldn't have his room as some sort of memorial to him. You know, it got redecorated. We moved on in that respect. But that was the reason why we redecorated, was because we were envisaging moving, and we didn't want to leave it the way it was with all the Everton stuff on the walls, all the Everton wallpaper, and you know, painted blue and all that sort of stuff. Because we were told by sort of like the estate agent, it just invite people just to come in and go up at the room, so to speak.
Ever since it happened, Did you want to move straight away? Was there a feeling that you wanted to move out of the area?
Melanie was pretty adamant that she wanted to move out of the area. I like the area. It's not a particularly bad area where we live. That said, Melanie wanted to move up to Woolton, which is closer to where Rhys is buried in Allerton Cemetery, and she wanted to be a little bit closer that she could walk up and see him whenever she felt the need to, rather than, you know, going up in the car and travelling all that way.
What's it like? Been like every single year for you? Every time it gets up to the anniversary of Rhys's death, is there a way that you and the rest of the family mark the occasion in any way?
We usually get together, you know, me, Melanie, and Owen, and you know, we may have a takeaway meal, or we may go out for a meal. There's nothing sort of like major that we do. You know, we may spend a lot of the day in the cemetery. You know, we're decorating his grave, taking flowers and balloons and stuff like that. It's a hard day to get through.
And in his birthday as well, is there anything you do to mark Rhys's birthday?
His birthday, we normally have a Chinese, because that was one of Rhys's favourite meals. You know, he loves his crispy duck and stuff like that. So, you know, we usually have a celebrate with a Chinese takeaway. Again, we'll spend most of the day up at the cemetery with him, maybe visit two or three times during the day. Obviously, arranging flowers and again balloons again to commemorate the day.
You'd obviously never forget what happened to him, but how do you feel during Reese's birthday when you do go to visit him as well?
Well, again, we reflect on what sort of person he would have been. We reflect on the waste of a young life, and struggle to understand how people were, the perpetrators, the parents, how they reacted, and how could they be so callous, and just lie and manipulate the truth to try and get away with it.
You are the prime example of how innocent lives can get caught up in something so horrendous. 10 years on from Reese's death, do you think that things have changed for the better?
No, I don't think it's changed for the better. I think that I still think there's young people out there with guns that they can't handle, and they just think that it's some sort of game to let off gunfire and shoot at people, and the Reese will happen again someday somewhere in this city. An innocent bystander will be caught up in the crossfire between two gangs.
How does it make you feel whenever you turn on the radio, turn on the TV, to see that there's been another shooting on Merseyside? We only heard a couple of weeks ago that an 18-year-old had become the latest victim of gun violence in the city.
It makes me despair as to what these young lads are getting up to, and how they can go out and basically take someone's life, and it destroys families. No matter who, what the family is, it destroys that family, and it has a ripple effect through their close family and their friends and the people who may have been involved, with the victim. It destroys and mars a lot of people's lives.
How does Mel feel about it when she hears that there's been another shooting? You mentioned there that you worry that there could be another thing that happens, like what happened to Reese as well.
Yeah, I think she struggles to try and understand why these people just haven't learned the lessons from what happened with Reese. And one day it could be a close member of their family that becomes the victim. Could be a bystander to something that goes on, and they could end up the victim, and their family could end up going through what we went through.
You mentioned this area before. Obviously, there was a lot of attention on this area after what happened to Reese and the whole of Merseyside about the problems surrounding guns as well. How has this community, this area, changed, do you think, over the past 10 years?
I think it was very evident after we lost Reese that a lot of the kids were kept in off the streets. Certainly around where we live, it was very, very quiet, as opposed to the kids playing football, the kids playing hide and seek. And it did go very quiet for a long time. It's probably, I don't know, I think it's getting back to normal, but it's still very evident that a lot of people keep the children very close at hand nowadays.
Do you think it's got better though? I know that there was a lot of media spotlight on this area, a lot of people saying how good this community was, so to speak. And like you said just before, that this area is a very nice area as well.
I think there's elements out there that it hasn't got anywhere. I think it stayed the same. I think the threats are still out there. I think there's there's a lot of young people out there with access to guns that they shouldn't have.
What would be your message, Steve, to anybody who's thinking of picking up a gun, has used a gun before, maybe even is considering doing that as well? What would be your message to them?
It'd be that, think of the consequences for the victim that you may target. Think about the effect it has on their family, think about the effect it has on their friends, and how would they like it if someone in their family was murdered or shot, and what effect it'd have on them. It's not a video game where, at the end of the game, you get more lives. It destroys your life, and it's just don't pick the gun up. Just make your own decision. Don't feel that you've got to have that peer pressure to, you know, to take part in these things. You know, make your own decisions on what you want to do.
Can I ask you about Little Boy Blue? Obviously, that aired in April. I know you and Melanie were very heavily involved in that. How did you feel watching it? Did you watch it at all?
Yeah, we watched it. We got a pre-screening of it, and we were very happy with the finished program, and even some of the things in there which were connected with Dave Kelly. You know, we didn't know about, you know, up until we saw Little Boy Blue, and some of it was quite surprising. You know, we were very happy with, you know, talking to Jeff Pope. I think he did a fantastic job with the writing, and obviously Quajo Dejani was involved with the production of it, and those two guys couldn't do enough for us.
What kind of effect did it have on you and Melanie and Owen seeing that? Did it help in any way at all?
I think it did, because it got out a lot more to the story that was actually comprehended at the time, because there was so much information being battered around that I think a lot of stuff was missed by people. Unless you actually sat there in court and listened to, you know, the evidence and what people went through and how they were put upon and browbeaten by the neighbours to you know, change the stories and stuff like that. It was a lot of those things were missed, and it was good that Jeff incorporated quite a lot of that stuff in it. I mean, there is stuff that obviously, because the programme is only, you know, just under 4 hours long, there's a lot of stuff that wouldn't actually, you know, get into the final 4 hours, but I think Jeff did it real justice.
You mentioned there about the lessons not being learned after Reese's death. Do you think that the programme might have gone a long way in reminding people, sort of showing them the true consequences of gun crime as well?
I think it did. I think it showed quite a lot of the things that went on, you know, behind the scenes. A lot of the turmoil and the pressures that not only, you know, we faced, but obviously Dave Kelly faced, and how you know, those families tried to paper over something horrendous that had gone on.